You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Two over to Walker. High fly ball driven deep the other way. Gentry back. He looks up. It's gone. Jordan Walker muscles went out the other way. His 17th home run of the year doubles the Cardinals' lead.
The pitch to Walker is scorched to deep center field. Back is Kersey. He jumps and it's gone. Jordan clears the wall. Home run number 18 to straightaway center for Jordan Walker.
Swing and a high drive deep left field. Walker way back, and it is gone. A home run. And it is home run number 19 for Jordan Walker, RBI 66, 67, and 68. And he has also scored now his 100th run, which leads the Texas League.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. I'm Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo, and we are geeked for the Arizona Fall League season. The rosters are out, so we are especially excited. We were thinking we might have the rosters for last week's podcast. We were all ready to talk about them then, and then we got them maybe a day after the podcast, maybe a couple days after the podcast. We got them now, and we're going to go over those in detail. This is one of our favorite events. I don't know if you can call it an event. Is it an event? Is the Arizona Fall League an event?
Sure. I usually say that it's one of my favorite. I could refer to it as one of my favorite events on the baseball calendar. So, yeah, I think it's fair.
College World Series, Arizona Fall League are your
exactly.
1-2.
And now, sadly, because of the timing of the draft and the combine, it's very hard to go to the College World Series.
Yeah, let's not talk about the timing.
Let's not talk about the things we can't do. We're here to talk about things we're about to do.
Let's talk about the Arizona Fall League.
Yes.
Well, I'm going to start by doing my tourism board pitch, telling fans, I say this every year.
Yes.
If you love baseball and you love prospects, there's no reason not to go to the Arizona Fall League because it's like all of the best things about spring training without the parking, without the expensive tickets, without the difficulty of getting tickets, without the long lines. You can walk up to the window, buy a ticket right before the game, sit wherever you want. I don't know how much fans will be able to interact with players this year. You know, it was different last year, the first year after the pandemic. But in the past, pre-pandemic, you used to be able to interact with the players a lot. You get to see a lot of great players. You get the run of the ballpark, especially this time of year where it's starting to get cold in a lot of parts of the country. You get the great Arizona weather, and it's the great Arizona weather, meaning 60 to 80 degrees and not 107 degrees or up. I cannot endorse Arizona Fall League enough.
Yes. All of that. Let's talk about the Fall League. Let's talk to the highest ranked prospect that's headed to the Arizona Fall League. That's Jordan Walker. We're going to talk to him just a little bit, and then we're going to break down each of the teams, tell you a couple players from each team that we're very excited to see. And then we have a question from the mailbag, which also pertains to the Arizona Fall League. So this is the 30th anniversary of the Arizona Fall League. And it will also be, Jim pointed out before we came on, the 30th season as well. Usually the anniversary is 1 year more than the number of seasons is 1 year more than the anniversary. Because we missed the 2020 season due to the pandemic, this is also the 30th season. How many seasons have each of you covered the Arizona Fall League? Can you remember your first year?
I don't remember my first year. I think I've been to, I'm going to guess, probably a dozen of them. I didn't go a ton when I was at Baseball America. I was usually working on the prospect handbook chained to my desk, so I did not go to a ton of Arizona Fall Leagues when I was at BA.
I don't know if I went my first fall. I didn't really know much about it. But I might have gone for a little bit. So that was 1999. Definitely by 2000, I was going. I've gone every year since.
I will say, I want to throw this out real quick, just because I'm a team player. If we resuscitate Hawaii Winter Baseball, which existed, I think, for 5 years, I volunteered to go to Hawaii to cover
as well. I tried so hard to do that. Never made it out there in the couple of years that that was in existence.
Yeah, we do need to bring that back. You're right.
Because I think it was around for 5 years. I think before MLB.com even existed.
Yeah.
And then it came back in 2006, and it was around for like 3 years and not since.
Yep, that sounds about right.
They used to have the winter meetings in Hawaii every year. Just saying.
Well, we need to bring that back as well. San Diego's not bad.
No.
All right, so this year's Arizona Fall League contingent, as always, is chock full of top prospects. This year, there are 16 of the top 100 prospects in baseball that are headed out there. The top two will be on the same team, which is pretty fun. Jordan Walker and Jordan Lawler will both be on the Salt River squad. The total of 16 is about what we're used to. Last year, there were 16. In 2019, there were 20. 2018, there were 18. Had a couple down years in 2015 and 2017 when there were only 9 and 11, but it sandwiched in between there, 21, and then going back before that, 20, 25, 21, 19. So this is right on par. And just to give you an idea of some of the players that have been there and you know, the players that you can expect this year's crew to turn out to be like, look back 2011, Bryce Harper, Mike Trout, Garrett Cole. 2012, the top prospects out there, Nick Castellanos, Christian Yelich, Javier Baez. 2013, Byron Buxton, number one overall prospect in baseball, was out there. In 2014, Buxton, Corey Seager, Josh Bell. And on it goes. Every year, the very best prospects, many of the very best prospects are out there. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., in 2018, was the number one overall prospect in baseball when he went. This year, we have number 6, Jordan Walker, number 13, Jordan Lawler, number 18, Noelvi Marte, number 20, Henry Davis, number 23, Robert Hassel III. So four top 20 prospects overall, 6 in the top 25 overall. As always, guys, a really nice bunch. And generally, you can explain this, but generally, a little light on elite pitching prospects. We have a couple of top 100 pitching prospects in Quinn Priester and Tank Hentz. But generally, this is a hitter's league.
Yeah, I mean, and that goes back to, you know, you're not too worried really about, oh, giving a hitter too many at-bats. But, you know, organizations watch the pitching innings totals very carefully. You know, especially in the wake of the pandemic, losing a whole season of pitching, you know, generally if a guy gets 100, 120 innings in, they aren't going to send him to the fall league. And even if he missed time, it has to be something that's not a serious arm injury. You know, maybe the guy had, you know, hamstring injury or a mild bout of tendonitis earlier in the year, but you know, you kind of have to really thread the needle to get your pitching prospect there. And, you know, I mean, what's interesting too, I don't even have the exact number anymore, but like in 30 years, the AFL sent more than 3,000 players to the big leagues. So, I mean, I'd you know, if you're watching games in the fall league this fall, like, you know, between two teams, you're probably, you know, on any particular day watching, you know, 15 future big leaguers are going to be on the field. I mean, it's just unbelievable. You know, and I think isn't the number like roughly 60% of everybody who plays in the fall league gets to the big leagues, which is crazy.
I think it's, you know, a testament to the job that the fall league does and help putting those finishing touches, and also the job the organizations do in sort of pinpointing the players who they feel are, you know, getting closer to being ready. And we spend a lot of time on our end focusing on the top prospects, and that's great, but it's also a place where players can go and, you know, make their case to be added to the 40-man roster, you know, or be potential picks in the Rule 5 draft, that presumably will be back. You know, so it's not just the elite level guys that, you know, you ticked off there, but also, you know, I'm always impressed when you see some guys who come out of the bullpen. We didn't know anything about, they're not top 30 prospects, but they come out and they throw really well. And then suddenly, bam, next year, they're pitching meaningful innings out of a big league bullpen. And that happens every single year. So just it's a nice job of finding the top prospect, especially the offensive ones. And sometimes they come and they don't perform all that well. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything. They still learn, you know, a lot, and helps provide that springboard for, you know, often what happens as early as opening day the next year.
Yeah, Jim, you mentioned nearly 60% of all AFL players making a major league roster. I haven't seen the updated number for 2021, but back in 2019, the All-Star game in Cleveland featured 43 Arizona Fall League alums.
So, yeah, and I know, I think I wrote the preview story going into last year, so we haven't updated this. But going into last year, 321 different Fall Leaguers had been All-Stars, 21 MVPs, 6 Cy Young Award winners, and 32 Rookies of the Year. So, I mean, you will see, like I said at the beginning, you will see a lot of very good players. And, you know, as Jonathan noted, a lot of times the guys make an immediate impact. I remember, I think it was 2018, you know, Pete Alonso led the minor leagues in home runs, led the Fall League in home runs. I think he hit a home run off, 103, 104 mile an hour fastball from Nate Pearson. Mm-hmm. And then, bam, the next year he hit 53 homers as a rookie. We saw Ronald Acuna star in the Fall League before making an impact. We saw Cody Bellinger, you know, hit, 40-something as a rookie right after being in the Fall League. I mean, you see a lot of really, really good players there. And then, as Jonathan pointed out, it's not like, oh, this guy's 2 or 3 years away. Like, the next year, those guys are having an immediate impact.
Yeah, it's fun, especially to see these younger guys who are on their way up, like Acuna was in 2017. The year before that, like Gleyber Torres was in 2016. But, you know, looking back at some of the names of MVPs in the league, the Joe Black MVP award winners, in 2019, Royce Lewis, 2018, Keston Hira, 2017, Ronald Acuna, 2016, Gleyber Torres. You got Chris Bryant in 2013, Nolan Arenado in 2011. You know, some really big names. And then you get the guys who come to the Fall League and just perform well and maybe weren't big prospects at the time, didn't go on to big league careers. You know, your Grant Desmes of the world, who I believe retired, was it the very next year?
Yep.
Yeah, after having just a huge season in the minors. Sam Fold was an Arizona Fall League MVP. Chip Cannon.
Sam Fold's still the only one to win, I believe, to win MVP and Stenson.
The Durnell Stenson
Sportsmanship Award.
That's right.
The same year.
That's right.
But you got to cite Ken Harvey, who won the first MVP award, I believe, in 2002. And still holds a record by hitting .479 in Arizona.
Yeah.
Speaking of some of the young guys in the league, let's talk about some of the very youngest players in the league. The youngest is D-backs infielder Davison De Los Santos, who was born June 21st, 2003. Won't turn 20 until June of next year. Jose Salas, infield prospect with the Marlins, also born in 2003. Other 2003 birth year mates, Jackson Merrill, shortstop prospect with the Padres, and Jason Dominguez, who's almost in every context the youngest something or another, it seems. But now getting a little long in the tooth. He's only fourth youngest in the Fall League. February 7th, 2003, his birthday. And then Joe Mack, recent draft 2021 second round pick by the Marlins, the fifth youngest player in the league. You guys, anyone in particular here that, not to steal the thunder of our later segment where you're going to pick a player from each team that you're most excited to see, but any of these guys in particular that, you're intrigued by?
De Los Santos really intrigues me. Davison De Los Santos with Dimebacks. I mean, we'll have an interview with Jordan Walker in a little bit, and I think Jordan Walker might have as much raw power as anybody in the minors. But one of the guys who can challenge him for that is Davison De Los Santos, who hit 22 home runs this year as a 19-year-old. I'm really looking forward to seeing his power. And like as we talked about, it's an offensive league, so we could really see, you know, some guys crush the ball. We saw last year Nelson Velasquez and a bunch of other guys. I'm looking forward to watching Jordan Walker, Davison De Los Santos, on the other end of the spectrum, Matt Mervis might be one of the older players in the fall league for the Cubs, who's chasing the minor league home run lead. He's going to be there too. I think we're going to see a lot of home runs this fall.
I think, you know, what's exciting about some of these young players, you know, we talk about guys springboarding to the big leagues. Some of them will use this to get them ready, you know, for double A. Some of them have already been in double A. So as young as this list is, you have guys like Jordan Walker, Jordan Lawler, who have played considerable time in double A. Even Jason Dominguez got promoted to double A for the very end of the season. So these aren't, let's challenge an A ball player and see what happens. These are guys who are, close to or already at the upper levels and are already on a fast track. And this could help them, continue on that very, very quick path to the big leagues.
Speaking of watching guys mash the ball in the fall league, we'll have to revive our total bases, our Arizona Fall League total bases fantasy league this year. It was a lot of fun last year. We each drafted 6 players and then just tallied up their total bases. We were allowed to substitute players when a player was either injured or removed from a fall league roster. Some of the names involved last year: Riley Green, Nolan Gorman, Brett Beatty, Bryson Stott, Juan Yepes, Lars Nootbaar, CJ Abrams, JJ Bleday. You may recognize all of these names from playing in the big leagues this year: Spencer Torkelson, Tristan Casas. So yeah, as you guys have both, I think, mentioned, guys having an immediate impact in the big leagues after being in the fall league. So we'll definitely have to revive that and get Sam Dykstra involved this year as well. Someone I'm positive will be on one of those teams, and someone who is one of the younger players in the league, and someone who is the highest ranked prospect headed to the fall league. Jordan Walker is going to join us and talk a little bit about his season and the upcoming Arizona Fall League season. We'll talk to Jordan right after this on the MLB Pipeline Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline Podcast. Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis, Jonathan Mayo, and now our special guest, Jordan Walker, who we're talking all Arizona Fall League on the podcast today. And Jordan, thank you very much for joining us. You will be headed out to the desert very soon. You excited to get there?
Absolutely, man. Ever since I heard that I was going, just emotions were high. I heard Mason was coming with me, so that was pretty cool too. So yeah, very excited to get out there, man.
Yeah, you guys have a nice crew going out to Arizona, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. All of my friends from, we were close together in spring training. I didn't think all these people would be like going to the fall league. I didn't even know I was going to the fall league, to be honest. But yeah, that group of guys is a really talented group of guys. So, it's really special out there.
Jordan, you already mentioned Mason Wynn. It's not surprising that you would bring him up this quickly into the interview because, everything I've read that you guys are really, really tight. I know you were excited when you found out you were going to the Futures game together. Now you're this step. Talk a little bit about, not only forming a bond with someone like that, but just this process is hard. It's a grind. Like having someone who's kind of going through it with you at the same time. How beneficial has that been for both of you?
It's been huge, man. Us being around the same age, getting drafted the same year. I knew about him like before. He was that uber prospect out of high school. I wasn't as close with him, but when we got to the Cardinals organization, we just clicked. And, having him along with the ride for me is, it's been huge. Having someone to talk to, he's feeling what I'm feeling. We have the same opinions on things like that. Having someone to, you know, tell like about how you're feeling or what you see at the plate, you know, bounced off of a good teammate who, you know, around your age, it's pretty nice to have, you know what I mean? And I'm lucky to have that at this point in my career. So, you know, it's been really special with him along the ride with me.
Hey, Jordan, I want to ask you about Tink Hentz, who's another member of that draft class who's headed to the fall league and maybe not quite as famous as you and Mason, because he hasn't been in the Futures game yet. But talk about, like, the kind, I mean, for a guy who's not, you know, the most physical guy in the world, he's got a huge arm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you guys, if you see him in the fall league, you guys, I feel like you guys will be very impressed. Every time Tink pitches, I'm very impressed. Really good fastball, really good off speed. You know, he's just that dude, and I feel like, you know, in all honesty, that we're going to see him move up, you know, the like Double A, the system pretty quickly with how good he is. And I don't think it's talked about it enough, to be honest, but he's a really, really good arm. Right. Got it. I've played with some of them. I haven't played with one of them, but I think everybody else I've played with at some point. And I think it's a really good group of guys. Can't tell all the secrets, but from what I've seen, I think it's a really, you know, really good group out there, and each and every one of them has deserved it. So, I think you're going to see something special from the other Cardinals prospects out there in Arizona.
Now, Jordan, I know you don't, you know, it's not a lot of time between the end of the Double-A season and going. I don't know if you get to have a little time to kind of reflect. Obviously, a really, really good year. You started out the year as, I think, the youngest position player, maybe the youngest player at all in the Texas League. What was that experience like, just in terms of getting used to that level? They say that jump, you know, is the hardest one. And you know, what are some of the things that maybe you realized during your time there? Like, okay, if I can just work on this a little bit more, especially in the fall league, then maybe St. Louis comes calling at some point next year.
I mean, it was definitely tough. I have to say that these pitchers are really good, man. We just played Tulsa, and I think each and every one of their bullpen arms was 95 plus. Like, you didn't see that in high A or single A. And I think getting acclimated to that velo along with the consistency they throw with, you know, their off speed. There's a dude in Tulsa who threw, he was like, I think he was 95, 97, but he threw almost 40% sliders. So being able to, you know, just because he throws hard doesn't mean he's going to throw his fastball. And, you know, thinking about the different types of pitches they have and when they're going to throw it is what I really needed to work on when I first got a Double-A. Because, I mean, high A and single A, they had good pitchers. But the, you know, the pitch counts and not the pitch counts, but the pitches they threw were a little bit more predictable. And, like, this is a fastball situation. They're going to throw a fastball. Or breaking ball situation, it's 0-2, they're going to probably go breaking ball. But in the Texas League, they threw whatever and in whatever count, and I feel like that's like the biggest adjustment for me. And learning that, and I had my older teammates, Chase Pender, Pedro, who's also going to the Fall League, you know, they gave me advice and told me how to handle the situation. But it was definitely, you know, an adjustment for me, and I think that's the biggest thing I needed to work on, you know, once I got to Double-A.
We are talking to Jordan Walker of the St. Louis Cardinals, who is the highest-ranked prospect headed out to the Arizona Fall League. Jordan, could you have drawn up this season any better than it went for you? I mean, you know, looking at your overall numbers, they are fantastic for, especially as Jonathan mentioned, the youngest player in the league to start the year. But one thing that really strikes me is just the consistency. Starting out in April, 817 OPS, May 996, June 871, July 907, August 912, September 835. I mean, you put up good numbers right from the start and every single month throughout the season.
You know, honestly, I think my approach was not like everybody was telling me home runs, home runs, home runs, which, you know, I feel like as I grow up, they will come. That's what my teammates have been telling me. People, I've heard that, you know, home runs will make you money. And in my opinion, I feel as if, you know, as long as I'm hitting the ball hard and finding a gap, I feel like, you know, as long as I'm driving in runs, the home runs will come and I won't be swinging for the fences and, you know, things like that. I feel like if I stay simple at the plate is when I finally, the most success, stay simple and stay relaxed. So I've been, you know, telling myself to do that and hopefully it will work out. And I find, you know, I can get into a consistent rhythm at the plate if I do that. So that's basically my mindset, nothing crazy. And you know, that's just really how I approach the season. And, you know, definitely blessed to have a season like this. I'm really confident about.
You say when you grow up, you're listed at 6'5", 220. How much you planning on growing?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to get older, I think I should have phrased it. Like, when I get older, you know.
Emotional maturity, Jason, please.
Right.
Seemed like you got that, too.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Hey, Jordan, one of the things that changed a little bit for you down the stretch, and you spent most of your first, you know, year and a half as a pro at third base. Obviously, the Cardinals have a pretty good third baseman, absolutely. Nolan Arenado, who might not be going anywhere for a while.
Right.
And so in the last 6 weeks, you play primarily outfield. I believe you're on the Salt River Rafters roster as an outfielder. How has that transition gone? Have they told you you're going to be playing primarily outfield? Have they told you what the plan is for next year, position-wise?
Honestly, so I think the plan is for me to play outfield, but I'm not completely sure. Wherever they tell me to go, I go. I'm trying to get into that big league lineup, so I'm trying to do whatever I can. I know that third base spot is pretty locked down right now. Wherever I was actually, you know, I liked outfield, you know, to be honest. I do. It's fun. Get to show off the arm a little bit, you know, that's fun. And then I'm right next to Antico, who's also going to the Fall League, one of my good buddies on the team. So it's fun out there in the outfield. I do enjoy playing outfield. And I'm not quite sure what the plan is, but I'm along for the ride. And wherever they need me, I'm pretty much willing to go. So,
yeah, I did take a peek at your assist total since you went to the outfield. So clearly you like showing off the arm. Do you throw a guy out? Do you nod at your buddy Mason Wynn, who everyone knows about arm, right? Yeah.
I mean, he hypes me up, you know what I'm saying? And every time when I get back in the dugout, he tells me how he probably would have gotten in quicker with his arm. We always have competitions like that. And I know he might have the better arm. I'm not going to admit it to him. But, yeah, it's fun little conversations like that, you know.
I was going to say, too, just for our listeners who aren't looking at their computer, I just looked at my computer, as Jonathan mentioned, your assist total. 10 assists and 30 outfield starts. That's a pretty nice pace there.
They're gonna stop running on you pretty soon, I have to think. What are the differences for you? Obviously, it's, you know, I think some people think when you move from the dirt to the outfield, there's fear you're gonna like lose focus, or I don't think that's an issue for you. But was there an adjustment just knowing that there are times where nothing happens for a little while out there?
Yeah, there is an adjustment. And I can't even lie. Sometimes I got caught, you know, maybe the pre-step late. Sometimes our pitchers work quicker than I would imagine. And you do lose track of time out there. But as I've played more outfield, I've gotten more and more locked in towards it. You know, and I think it's just an adjustment. Getting used to the outfield is definitely going to be an adjustment for me. Reads, I feel like, is the biggest adjustment for me. But, you know, I wasn't used to being that far away from home plate. So, as of right now, I feel like the adjustment's being made, and, you know, there's always still some things to work on. But, yeah, it was definitely different out there, if that was your question. Right. I am. Absolutely. Yep. So I think my dad has the videos. It hit it somewhere in the parking lot. He can tell you the story better than I can. He has a video if you wanted to see it. The ball got lost somewhere in the parking lot and on the T-ball field. But yeah, I don't think I really. I was definitely a fan of Chipper Jones, Jason Hayward, growing up. But I just don't think I really like idolized. I definitely wanted to be like some, like be a big leader like them, strong, hit for power. But like when it comes to, you know, the way I do things in the baseball field, I don't think it really correlates with any of them.
You know, Jason's asking about guys. It's funny because Jim and I are famous for hating comps to major league players. But I wanted to ask you if there's anybody that you see some of yourself in. I see a big, strong right-handed hitter who's moved from third to the outfield. I think of Chris Bryant a little bit. I don't know if he's a guy that you watch to sort of.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yep. I've heard that comp before.
Okay, good. Because sure. Yeah, it's rare I put them out there. So, but anybody else that you watch, even maybe it's not even like the same kind of player, but boy, I really like their approach. Like I know this year you worked on hitting the ball with authority the other way. Are there guys that you like to watch how they do that, and that's helped you?
You know, I'm a big avid baseball fan, but when I watch MLB baseball, I'm not really thinking anything towards my game. Some of my teammates, one teammate in particular said that my side view swing is similar to Austin Riley's, but that's pretty much the only comp that I've heard, this whole season. I just like observing baseball games. I really don't, you know, kind of just look about it. Oh, I can do that as a part of my game. I try to keep mine as simple as possible. If the ball's away, drive it the other way. If it's in, just react. So, pretty much that much.
Jordan, I always like to ask players, who's the best pitcher you faced so far in pro ball? Does anybody stand out? And are you looking forward to facing anybody in particular in the fall league? Did you face Kumar Rocker at all when you were both Georgia amateurs?
I did not. But I did hear that he was going to the fall league, so that would be a pretty cool matchup. That would definitely be a pretty cool matchup. Man, there's a lot of pitchers that I think were really tough. Name a few of them. There's from Arkansas Travelers, there's this Prelander Baroa, Bobby Miller, obviously. There's another dude from the Travelers, Ty Dollard. His command was really good. The Travelers, Tulsa pitching staff, those are two of the best pitching staffs. I mean, they had a lot of good pitchers that I just think were some of the best pitchers I've ever seen. So I can name a bunch of them off those staffs, and they're probably the best I've seen. So.
Hey, Jordan, I have to ask, I'm from St. Louis. I saw that your mom went to Wash U.
Yeah, she did. Yes, sir.
Was there any built-in Cardinal fandom in your family? Like when you got drafted by the Cardinals, was there some additional excitement there?
The baseball fan is on my dad's side. My mom's not. It wasn't a big baseball fan, so her going to Wash U didn't mean as much as it does now. So
yeah, I read a story that your dad has to kind of watch your games on the iPad on the download during dinner and can't bring it up and the volume's got to be down. Is that still the case?
Right. I think so. I'm not sure. But he always knows what happens in the game, so that's probably what happens.
Maybe when you get to the big leagues, the volume can come up.
For sure.
All right. Well, Jordan Walker, thank you very much for joining us. We're looking forward to seeing you out in the fall league.
Thank you.
Congratulations on a great year.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
Okay, right, take care, Jordan.
All right, bye.
Jordan Walker, we were going to take a break, and we'll come back, resume the MLB Pipeline podcast right after this.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Welcome back to the MLB Pipeline podcast. Jason Ratliff here with Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo. And thanks very much to St. Louis Cardinals third base / outfield prospect Jordan Walker for joining us on the show today. Just talked to Jordan Walker. Now let's talk about Jordan Walker in a little bit, and also some other guys that we're excited to see in the fall league. We're going to go team by team. If you're not familiar with the teams in the Arizona Fall League, there are six. They are comprised of five players from five major league organizations each. They rotate from year to year as to which teams, major league organizations, make up those teams. They're in Glendale, Peoria, Salt River, Surprise, Scottsdale, and Mesa. Let's start with Glendale, which is made up of teams of players from the White Sox, Twins, Brewers, Dodgers, Reds. And Glendale, Glendale has this year three top 100 prospects on their roster. Looks like, are you guys both going to talk about top 100 prospect here? Jonathan, who you got?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Noel V. Marte, now of the Reds. Of course, he came from the Mariners in the Luis Castillo trade, and he kind of had an up and down season. Another super young guy. But even though he had an up and down season, he still finished just a homer shy of a 2020 year, just to show the kind of tools that he has. Finished strongly, in Dayton. He was in high A for the entirety of the year and hit very, very well down the stretch. Clearly, he was kind of working on his approach. The power numbers over the last month, this is not good, but he hit close to 350. I think he drew more walks than strikeouts during that span. Yes. So, the power has always been there, and it's interesting to see if he's making huge steps forward in terms of his hit tool. And then the biggest question is, can he play shortstop? A lot of people think he'll move, and the Reds obviously have a lot of talent up the middle. Matt McClain will be in the fall league with him. We talked to Ellie De La Cruz last week on the podcast. All three of them obviously will not end up playing shortstop, so it'll be interesting to see what happens. Be curious to see if, even if Marte gets some reps at third base in the fall league, and that's the beginning of seeing what that looks like. He's athletic enough to play center field also, but I'm mostly excited to see what the bat looks like.
Yeah, speaking of bats who are intriguing, I'm really intrigued by Andy Pahez on that same roster with the Glendale Desert Dogs, Dodgers outfielder. He's on the top 100 prospects list. And, he kind of fits that classic right field profile. It's big time raw power. It's well above average arm strength. It might be a 70 arm on the 20-80 scouting scale. He's put up numbers everywhere he's been in the minors. Batting average down to .236 this year. There is some swing and miss, but he did hit 26 home runs as a 21-year-old in AA. Really interesting set of tools. Like I said, kind of that classic right field profile. And interestingly, there's another Dodgers outfield prospect who's like a level behind him in the same system. That'd be Jose Ramos, who's also on the Glendale roster, who's got very, very similar tools. It's going to be interesting to watch both of those guys.
All right. So that's your Glendale Desert Dogs. Now let's talk about your Peoria Javelinas. This squad has a couple of top 100 prospects on it. And Peoria is made up of players from Cleveland, Washington, Seattle, San Diego, and the New York Mets. Jonathan, which Javelina are you looking forward to watching?
There are some good choices here. And, a lot of guys from from this particular draft class, from 2020, the first rounders starting to reach the upper levels. But Robert Hassel III is a guy I remember seeing. I guess it would have been Jim. What, the PDP league in
19?
Was it the 19? Yeah. Right, the summer before, and was really impressed with the hit tool then. I'm still impressed with the hit tool now. He did not hit post-trade, when he, in the Juan Soto deal, going from the Padres to the Nationals. And even though he did get moved up to AA, so this is a chance for him to extend the season a little bit, get a few more reps. I think he's going to hit. The question will be, how much power is he going to have? He's always been a hit-over-power guy, and this year it's been, he's hit 11 homers and had 25 doubles, in 513 plate appearances. So good, not great. I think if he's going to profile well in a corner spot, then power have to come. But he has played a lot of center field, and I know a lot of people think that he can stick there. So I'm curious to see what that looks like. Because when I saw him back then, he seemed more of a corner outfield, assuming he was going to grow into some more power and slow down a little bit. But maybe he's got a slightly different profile now.
I was going to say I'm going with another Padre because I keep associating Robert Hassel with the Padres. And I know he's with the Nationals now in the Juan Soto trade. But fellow former Padres first-round pick, I guess is the way I need to put this. Jackson Merrill's super interesting to me. He was a guy, Jonathan, he was in your neck of the draft. You have Maryland in kind of the Northeast. He was a late helium guy. in 2021, went at the end of the first round. Padres saved some money, which allowed them to get James Wood in the second round, and he was a revelation this year. He also went to the Nationals in that Juan Soto trade. But Merrill came out this year. He profiles as a middle infielder who can hit for average, hit for power. He did exactly that. He hit 339 this year, 906 ops. Only played 55 games because he missed time with a wrist injury. So the fall league is going to get him a chance to make up some at-bats. But I really think this is a guy who a year from now could shoot up the top 100 prospects list if he continues to perform like he did this year. And, you know, as we mentioned before, third youngest player in the fall league, won't turn 20 until next April.
All right. So the number one prospect for each of those two organizations. Let's move on to the Salt River Rafters, who we've mentioned previously. This team has the two highest ranked prospects headed out to the desert in the Jordans, Walker and Lawler. Also has a AFL leading five top 100 prospects overall. There have not been more top 100 prospects on an Arizona Fall League team since back in 2016, when Glendale had seven, which included Cody Bellinger, Alex Verdugo, Zach Collins, Harrison Bader, David Paulino, Francis Martes. But this team seems to be pretty stacked.
As if we needed a reason to go to Salt River Fields. We were telling Jordan Walker before we officially talked to him how much he's going to enjoy playing there. But yeah, you mentioned Jordan Lawler, number six pick in last year's draft. He's on that youngest player list and comes in at number nine overall. I think what's amazing is, you know, we thought he might go at the very top of the draft. He quote unquote slid to six. The Diamondbacks were thrilled and taking the best available player. And then he got hurt. And it was a shoulder injury, and everyone was a little worried because he didn't play really during his debut. And then all he did was come out and hit his way across three levels to finish in Double A. He's way, way ahead of the curve now. And overall for the year, 16 homers, 39 steals, an ops over 900. That's a really, really strong first full season for a guy who missed his debut summer. My guess is he goes to the fall league. He could start back in Double A, even if not set the world on fire in Double A. But if he learns some things here and then it looks like he's taken another step forward in spring training, he could go to Triple A to start the year. I mean, there's no rush because he is so incredibly young. He won't turn 21 until next July. So even if they started him back in Double A, but this is a chance for him to get some more reps in his home facility, and both sides of the ball. When he's already, like I said, to me, kind of way ahead, I think, of where anyone thought even an advanced high schooler would be in his first full year of pro ball.
And I think you could say the same thing about Jordan Walker. I mean, I'll make the obvious pick here. There's a lot of good options on Salt River. Walker, who we just talked to, highest ranked prospect in the league at number six. And, as a bigger guy, he's 6'4", 6'5". I think people thought, like you knew the power was there. I think scouts thought he might take a little while to adapt pro pitching. He's got a naturally long swing. And that hasn't been the case. He handled Double A very easily this year. I think he's one of your contenders to lead the league in homers. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I mentioned earlier, I think he's got as much raw power as anybody probably in minor league baseball. So it'll be fun watching him just destroy Arizona Fall League pitching. And then two, as we talked about in the interview, he played mostly third base for his whole career up until the last 6 weeks of this season. And obviously as he gets close to the big leagues and he's knocking on the door, I think we'll see him at some point, maybe by middle of next year. Maybe he gets a little Triple A time first. But Nolan Arenado, has third base locked down in St. Louis. And I don't know his opt-out status. I guess he can opt out, but whatever. I mean, he looks like he's the third baseman long term. So Walker started playing the outfield toward the end of the season. As we noted in the interview, 10 assists in 30 games. So the arm certainly plays in right field. And I'll be curious to watch how he looks in the outfield, because in his case, I think the defense is just as important. I mean, he's only played about 30 games in the outfield. This gives him a chance to play another 20 or so in the outfield. And if he's going to, say, be part of that big league outfield next season, getting that experience will be a key. So I'm looking forward to him offensively, but also defensively.
The other top 100 prospects on the Salt River squad include the number 24 overall prospect, Zach Veen, the Rockies, and then a couple guys that Jordan gave us scouting reports on. His fellow Cardinal mates, Mason Wynn, who's number 54, and Tank Hentz, who is number 95. All right, moving on to Surprise. And this is a team that has three top 100 prospects on it, including a former number one overall draft pick.
Yeah, all three top 100 guys from the same organization. I guess I'll be a homer here. But I think anytime you get a chance to see the number one overall pick from the previous year's draft, you're going to welcome that opportunity. And that's Henry Davis. When I went out to Altoona for our pipeline game of the month, he was hurt. So I didn't get a chance to see him play. And that's a big reason why he's headed out to the Fall League. He played in 59 games.
Because Jonathan didn't get to see him play.
That's right. I said, I need to see him play. He only played in 59 games all year, absolutely raked in Greensboro, and got pushed up to Double A. I think everyone hits in Greensboro, and struggled in Altoona, but also had no sense of continuity, or regular playing time, wrist injuries. He got hit 20 times in 59 games. That's a lot of hit by pitches. I think it's something that probably will need to be addressed. But the power is there. And then the biggest questions, some of the times guys that we're excited to see, like I want to see him swing the bat, sure. But I also want to talk to people and see what the catching looks like. Because the biggest question, right, the only question about Henry Davis is, well, can he, will he stick behind the plate? And I think this will be a really good opportunity for him to continue to work, to work with upper level pitchers. And I, talked to a lot of guys over there, even just catching bullpens in the Fall League have helped guys sort of take a step forward. I don't think he's ever going to be a Gold Glove winner, but can he get to the point where he, is solid enough and be an offensive minded guy in Pittsburgh in the near future?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Kumar Rocker, who's going to have one of the best arms in the league. I think, I guess we're going to talk about 12 players here. I think he's the only pitcher we're going to bring up, Jonathan. But, we've gone over his saga so many times on this podcast. Number 10 overall pick in last year's draft after starring for 3 years at Vanderbilt. Fails the physical with the Mets. They don't sign him. He has shoulder surgery. He resurfaces in independent ball this year. Shows off his arm in short stints. And then winds up shocking everyone, I think, by going third overall in the draft, which enabled the Rangers to use their second pick, which wasn't in the fourth until the fourth round, on Brock Porter, who's the top high school pitcher in the draft. And I mean, Rocker showed, in his short stints in independent ball, he hit 99 with the fastball. He showed the wipeout slider. I think it was funny because we discussed this on the podcast too. There was a lot of talk like, oh, maybe somebody could draft Kumar and immediately put him in the bullpen, which seemed to me to be like a crazy talk for a guy who's never relieved and he's coming off shoulder surgery, rushed back from that. And the thought that somebody might draft him and try to get him in the big league bullpen by this point to help down the stretch. And I really like the way the Rangers have handled this. They haven't had him pitch. He hasn't officially made his pro debut yet. They just kind of, let him, continue to work his way back from the shoulder surgery without having to pitch in games. They're going to get him a little acclimated to pro ball here and get him going next year. I don't think we're necessarily, it's the Fall League, so we're not going to see him go 6-7 innings to start. I'll be curious to see what he looks like over a full season next year, but it'll be good to see Kumar Rocker on the mound, and he will have one of the best arms in the Fall League.
All right, Nick Gonzalez and Quinn Priester, the other two top 100 prospects on the Surprise roster. Scottsdale is the only team without a top 100 prospect, but there are certainly some interesting names on this roster, including a couple of former top 100 prospects and maybe some future top 100 prospects as well. Who are you guys looking forward to seeing here?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things, another thing that's exciting about going to the Fall League is to see, a guy who maybe was a top 100 guy, but had a rough season,
and then can go out and kind of reclaim his status or jump back on the radar, however you want to put it. And for me, Nick York is that guy. I mean, he's kind of been intriguing for since he was surprisingly drafted in the first round by the Red Sox in 2020. Is from my area in California. You know, he didn't play defensively his senior year of high school because of a shoulder injury, kind of only DH'd. So it was a little surprise to see him go that high. And then he goes out in his first full year and just absolutely rakes across two levels of A-ball, finishes with an OPS of 928 and lands on our top 100, goes back to high A Greenville this year and really struggles, struggles with injuries, struggles with consistency, ends up with a 668 OPS. But, you know, I think what people need to remember, and we've got some questions about him in particular, he's also on that list of younger players. He's only 20. He'll be 21 right around opening day next year. So there is plenty of time. And then he won't be the first prospect to struggle for a year and then figure things out. And this could be a really good opportunity for him to see consistent velocity, pitchers with slightly different approaches, things of that. And even if the pitching's not as good, it tends to be at a higher level. And that could get him ready to make the step to AA, even though this year was a bit of a struggle for him. And, he is the kind of guy who, not just from a fall league performance, but he could kind of right the ship and then hit the ground running next year and certainly could land back on the top 100 if he starts swinging the bat the way he did last year.
Yeah, I bet we see him back on the top 100 next year, Jonathan. I just think he had the toe and the wrist injuries earlier in the year, and he got off to a bad start and dug himself a hole, and it just never kind of got right. So I'll be curious to see how good the swing looks, because we'd heard such great things about it coming into the year. And you're talking about another guy who's had some health issues, but more serious, Heston Kjerstad. A little bit of a surprise, number two overall pick in 2020, top 10 type prospect in that pandemic draft. But the Orioles took him at two to save money to spend on other guys. And then he just couldn't get on the field. He had lingering effects from myocarditis, which is a viral inflammation of the heart that kind of came up after the draft. And he didn't make his pro debut until this June, like 2 years after they drafted him. The power that we'd seen in the past that made him such an attractive pick was still there. That's his signature tool. He's also got a solid arm. He's kind of another classic right field profile. And he really tore up low A for 3 weeks this year. He had 463. And then, that average was basically cut in half when he got to high A. Strikeouts rose some, as he got, had to adapt to high A pitching. So this will be the best pitching that he's seen on a consistent basis, even if pitching isn't the AFL strong suit. But it's, I think, getting him more experience to make up for a lot of lost time and help prepare him for the transition to double A. Because, you look at all the good things that have happened with the Orioles this year and how deep their system is. If they get Heston Kjerstad healthy and back to where he was when they drafted him, I mean, that's another middle of the order bat that could be really exciting in Baltimore not in the not too distant future is what I'm trying to say.
The organizations that make up the Scottsdale squad, Boston and Baltimore, obviously, as well as the Giants and the Angels and the Braves. And moving on to look at the Mesa roster. This team has three top 100 prospects. It is made up of players from Tampa Bay, Miami, Oakland, Chicago Cubs, and the New York Yankees. Jonathan, give us a guy to watch.
Yeah, I'm really kind of excited and intrigued to see all of the A's contingent. They're sending a bunch of previously injured pitchers. That's not who I'm going to focus on, but they have one of the more intriguing groups, even if it's not as high profile as some. Just because if those guys perform, then the A's farm system could take a really big step forward. But the guy that I want to focus on is Zach Geloff, the University of Virginia product, who they took in the second round of last year's draft. And he came out of the gate this year looking like an incredibly good player. I was getting, we'll say, gentle pressure from those within the A's organization saying, like, you need to look at this guy as a top 100 guy. They were telling me this last year. And then he came out and kind of proved it, hit 329 in April, 301 in May, Then he tore the labrum in his non-throwing shoulder. So he missed a bunch of time and never really got back on track. You know, though he had a bunch of homers in August when he did come back. So, you know, he's played third base is his natural position. He can play there. They've had him playing second. He's more athletic than I think, you know, any of the reports that I had coming out of college. They see him as one of the fastest players in the organization. So I'm kind of excited to see what that athleticism looks like, where he's going to play defensively. And on the down low, I'm sort of keeping an eye out because for me, he's a prime candidate to play for Team Israel in next spring's World Baseball Classic.
Is it really on the down low if you just told our entire podcast listenership that you're keeping
an eye on? That's correct. They can keep a secret.
Okay. So I think you're underestimating the many thousands of people who listen to our podcast. But
we're overestimating them.
there you go. But anyway, I'm going to go with Jason Dominguez. We saw him hit a home run at the Futures game, which is cool. I'm looking forward to getting to see some more of him. Yeah, I wonder how many times we've mentioned Jason Dominguez on the podcast in the last 3 years. But, you know, the most.
Don't do the comp, Jim. Don't
I'm not do doing the comp, but the most hyped international prospect probably of all time. And, you know, it's funny because on one hand, you know, I feel like he was so hyped that it would almost be impossible to live up to expectations. You know, and he hasn't come out and hit 400 with, you know, 40 homers and 40 steals in the season. But at the same time, for a 19-year-old, he got to AA this year, you know, played most of his season in single A and high A. He hit 273, he hit 16 home runs, he stole 37 bases, he drew 72 walks. I mean, he's a physical specimen. I think that the 5'10", 190 he's listed at is a little bit conservative. I think he's bigger than that. Still has a chance for plus tools across the board. Switch hitter. He's got skills and instincts to go with the tools. So he's one of the more exciting guys, I think, in the entire fall league. And I'm looking forward to getting a chance to see him for more than just a couple at-bats in the Futures game.
Yeah, and he was considerably better as he moved up the ladder from Tampa to Hudson Valley. Florida State League, obviously, always a bit of a pitcher's league, but it slashed 306, 397, 510 for a 907 OPS at Hudson Valley. It's scuffled in the early going, but just a handful of games played at AA Somerset. But yeah, Jim, I agree with you that the expectations were so high. And then last year, I think people, you know, the general consensus was that the star had faded a bit, but it was so early and he was so young. And then, you know, this year, like you said, pretty impressive season for age and level and three levels. So, yeah, that's an exciting team to watch in Mesa. They also have Brennan Davis, Phoenix native Cubs prospect who missed most of the year with a back problem. He's the third top 100 prospect on that Mesa squad. So that's a breakdown of the six Arizona Fall League teams. The season starts. Did we even mention when the season starts on October 3rd? Don't know if we mentioned that. Runs through November 12th. A couple games will be on MLB Network. You can watch the Fall Stars game and the championship game. Those will be the final two weekends of the season. So be sure to tune into those a couple months down the line.
You know, what's also cool, Jason, I was going to interject real quick. It won't be televised, but again, another reason good Arizona with all these sluggers out there, they're going to have the first ever That's AFL right. Home Run Derby the day before the Fall Stars game. So that'll be pretty cool too.
Exactly. All right. All Fall League for this episode of the MLB Pipeline podcast, including our mailbag question, which comes from Luca / Jack Leiter Stan. FFL Luca on Twitter asks, could a strong AFL performance from Kumar Rocker put him in consideration as a top 100 prospect?
I mean, I think the short answer is, in consideration, yes. I think he already kind of is in consideration. From a talent perspective, this is a guy who was at the top of many draft boards a year ago and went in the top of the first round. Understanding the circumstances, you know, we need to see if he can be healthy. I don't think the Fall League alone would. I'm going to speak for myself here. But I don't think a strong Fall League performance alone would put him in the top 100, but it certainly would help build the case. And if he sort of comes out and throws well and is healthy next year, then he would be a sort of an easy addition, you know, sort of with the caveat that somehow we managed to go through this entire podcast without talking about small sample sizes, which is amazing. But, you know, with the fall league, we always will tell people that you don't want to put too much stock into it one way or the other. A strong fall league does not, you know, a strong fall league does not necessarily lend itself to future success or a huge jump in the rankings or stardom. And there have been plenty of guys who have come and been, you know, not good in the fall league and they've gone on to be all-stars, right? So it's not, it's too short amount of time. It's too hitter friendly. There are too many sort of caveats there that lend itself to not wanting to go too bonkers. But I do think that if he pitches well, that will sort of help sort of maybe lead the way to him being an addition in the future.
Yeah, no, I think all that's very fair. I would not, I mean, as you noted, John, I mean, let's say he goes out and pitches 20 innings and tears it up. I still don't think I'd put him on the top 100 necessarily going to see the next season. My biggest question with Kumar Rocker, and I do our Rangers list, and so I have him eighth on a very deep Rangers list, is before I fully buy into him as a top 100, probably top 100 talent, no question. Top 100 health, that remains to be seen. He had shoulder surgery last September. It was not as benign as ESPN, I think, had the initial report and made it sound like he was there for 2 minutes and they tapped him on the shoulder and all's good. Like there were some, you know, it was arthroscopic, but it wasn't just, you know, mild shoulder surgery and you're brand new and good forever. I know, you know, from talking to teams before the draft, there's concern about his elbow. There's concern about his shoulder. To me, the biggest question is could Kumar Rocker, instead of flashing stuff for a couple innings in an independent league and some, you know, for a handful of times, can he maintain quality stuff, six innings at a time over a full season? I hope he can. I mean, you always root for guys to be healthy and you know, get back to what he was when he was fully healthy at Vanderbilt. But I think, at least in my mind, there's enough of a question. I want to see that next spring for a couple months before I buy in fully that he's a top 100 prospect. So as you said, Jonathan, I think it can bolster his case, and I think he already is under consideration. I don't think it will put him over the top, at least not for me going into next year.
One of the many, many things to watch at the Arizona Fall League, which again gets underway just a couple weeks from now on October 3rd. Thanks to Leiter Stan for that question, and special thanks to Jordan Walker for joining us on the episode today. That's going to do it for this week's MLB Pipeline podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode. If you're enjoying the show or have any suggestions, leave us a rating and a review. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.